This is Federica on the show. So did you hear? Welcome, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. And I have guests on the air with me today, so I want to thank you all for making it. As those of you who have been listening to my show for a while know that this is kind of an open-ended conversational show where I, your host, Federica, take you kind of on a deep dive exploring different themes of what's popular and what's relevant in society today, with a focus on sociopolitical issues, cross-cultural experiences, and pop culture. And every once in a while on the show, I have the opportunity to interview folks and talk about what they do and give a spotlight to local organizations and event planners and people just doing good work and interesting things in our community here in Spokane. And today is one of those days. So I want to thank my guests for making it on the air today with all the craziness. Here I have a couple of representatives from Terrain, which is a staple of the arts community here in Spokane. And they have an event coming up next weekend called The Bazaar. And so I just want to talk a little bit about what that is, what you guys do, and let you take the lead about just getting into everything you represent and what you're planning to do with the event. So welcome, Jackie, the ops director, and then we have Rachel Chambers, the event managers from Terrain, and we're going to, tell us all about this upcoming event you guys are doing.
Yeah. So I'm going to apologize ahead of time. There's a good chance I sneeze.
That's okay.
I'm sniffling a bunch. Not only is it crazy outside, the allergy level has gone way high. So this weekend we have Bazaar, which is our all local art market that we hold on Main Street downtown, or Main Avenue downtown, between Lincoln and Wall. And we have about 130 local vendors that sell at that event. We've been holding that event for, I should know this off the top of my head. 12 years now? I think 12. And so it's just a really great way to bring people downtown, great way for them to support local artists. We have, it runs the gamut from print making to ceramicists to visual artists, bath and body, all kinds of stuff. So we love to have it downtown. We love to bring people downtown. We love the juxtaposition of supporting local in the middle of downtown next to some more established large retailers and giving people kind of that choice to shop two ways.
That's great.
Yeah.
So
I didn't talk about all the things at Bazaar. I'll let you do that.
Yeah, of course. I imagine you have so much more to say about all that's going to be there. And I have my questions too. But so first of all, for those of you who may not be familiar with who Terrain is, what Terrain is, how would you describe what you guys do?
Yeah, so we are an actual 501c3 nonprofit, and we support artists through a number of different ways. We do that through our large-scale events that we have. We also do it through our ongoing programming. So our large-scale events that we do besides Bazaar are Terrain, our flagship event, and Burzaar. Terrain is our big multimedia event that happens in October, and Burzaar is similar to Bazaar, but cleverly in the wintertime when it's cold. I know, we're so clever. And then we also have, for our ongoing programming, we have our storefront called From Here, which supports 145 local makers that sell out of the store every day. You can shop local 7 days a week. And then we also have our gallery, which has monthly shows that shows local and traveling artists. And we've had that open for many, many years now. And then we have a program called Creative Enterprise, which is a 14-week business incubation program where at the end the artists leave with a fully fleshed business plan, and we kind of, now they're getting that support on how to make their creative practice into a business. And then we also do a ton of other things. Terrain Talks, which is kind of a spinoff of Creative Enterprise. It's a free, we do it bi-monthly kind of education around business or arts type topics. What else do we have? It's like,
that's a great roundup. Man, that's beautiful.
There's a lot. It's a lot
to dig into there.
It is a lot, but we're trying to give artists as many opportunities as we can, and also support them economically.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah.
I've been wanting to come to your gallery recently. It's been a long time.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's interesting. In the time that I've lived here, I've always known that terrain is a thing, but I was always kind of confused. Like, wait, is it an organization? Is it a gallery? Is it an event? Like, what are you guys?
Yeah.
So it sounds like it's kind of an all of the above situation.
Yeah, we do a lot of stuff and it can be confusing. And not only that, we're kind of spread across different, you know, we've got our gallery on Monroe. We have our storefront in the mall. And a lot of people don't know that that's even our storefront, even though our terrain logo is like on the inside and our mission statement's on the wall. It just, and that's okay. Like, we don't, as long as they're shopping and they're buying local, that is fine by us. And then we have obviously our large scale events that are in many different locations. And, you know, like our flagship event has always been transient. It moves into different buildings. We've been in, I think, 5 different buildings over the last 17 years. And so that also is confusing for people sometimes, but it's all kind of comes together if you look at it. We always think of it as kind of this different pathway the artist can come into the organization. So whether they just want to show one piece of terrain and that's like all they want to do, but they want to share that with their community, great. They might be somebody who already has a small creative business and they want to start selling more locally, then they'll join us in our storefront. And then they'll start learning about all the other different ways that they can kind of get involved and ways that we can support them.
And even from a non-artist perspective, it's interesting where people find terrain and where that reaches them in their lives. A lot of people just know us for the flagship event. They come once a year. They have a great time. They don't think about us again until the next year. And we love those people for showing up. Mm-hmm. We have people who come to the gallery every first Friday. There's a lot of ways that you can touch base.
Yeah.
Mm. You guys, so is this information all on like your website, Facebook, Instagram?
Yeah, we are on all of the things.
All the socials.
Find us everywhere.
Trying actively not to be on TikTok personally. But our website kind of dives into all of the different things that we do. And obviously, you know, everything, I should say, all of our big events are all juried events, so you apply to them. So if somebody's interested in participating in any of those, we actually, our call for our flagship event, Terrain, closes on June 22nd. And that's a really great opportunity for, I mean, it's open to anyone.
It's free to apply.
Age, free to apply, free to attend. I should say that everything we do basically is free to the public. Mm. And so we don't want your economic status to be a barrier to accessing art. And we also, I should say, for Bazaar, one of the things that we're really proud of for Bazaar and Burzar in particular is that we ask the artists or the booth artists.
Vendors,
that's the word. Vendors to keep 50% of their booth prices under $100 or less so that, you know, again, that economic barrier. If somebody wants to come and buy a $5 sticker from you, that's awesome. And they may, you know, start a relationship with you in 5 years or 10 years from now. They may come back and be able to buy a $700 painting or something. So we really not only want to make it accessible to just come and enjoy it, but also accessible to support artists.
Yeah, it seems like sometimes what is difficult with supporting local or supporting, you know, whether it's art or handmade crafts, clothing, etc., anything individually made with intention and care is going to be put at a higher price point, which is fair for the artist for the amount of work you're putting in. But unfortunately, the downside of that sometimes is that those pieces of handcrafted works, whether it's, you know, paintings or clothing, anything, it could be anything really, but anything like kind of locally made, handmade, seems to become a kind of a luxury item. It's often marketed as something for people who have means to spend extra.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you're kind of trying to develop a way to work through that and kind of come to a middle ground.
Yeah, equity is obviously a massive importance of our organization, but it's also it's shifting people's mindsets. You know, the different value you place on things is obviously, you know, sometimes it comes down to a dollar perspective, or it's, you know, you're getting something quality, you're meeting the person, the money that you're spending, you know, buying something from somebody local, that keeps more money in our community through taxes. So it's kind of this, like,
it's an investment.
Yeah. It's like, if we did it more often, the narrative or the mindset around it might change a little bit. And obviously right now we know the economics of things right now aren't great. Mm-hmm. And artists are feeling it just as much as anyone else. And I think it is, again, just that mind shift of like buying intentionally versus mm-hmm. just buying to buy.
And I think that that's something that Spokane is doing really well and continues to improve at, is increasing the places and the ease of buying local and buying handmade. There's such a great art market scene happening in Spokane that we're really grateful to be a part of. And one of the things that we can do for the artists in our community is just to make it as easy as possible for people to access their art and their goods and to be able to afford it as well.
And educating them too. You know, a lot of what I was talking about is like the programming and things that we do. We're educating the artists on, you know, what is your price point? You know, where do you see people, customers be like, oh, I can't buy that. If they can't buy that $60 mug, they could buy that like $20 dish or something, you know,
a variety.
Yeah. It's like having that variety of product that is almost more important than any of it. It's like as an artist or as a small creative business wanting to provide those products to people, you kind of have to give them different entry points. And we talk a lot about that in our storefront with our makers in our store. We talk a lot about it when we're at Terrain, our big flagship event. You know, you may have a $700 painting and that's awesome, and somebody might buy that, but they're going to definitely buy a $25 print, you know, and we're starting to see that. The sales of prints at Terrain are just astronomical now. It's like, it's totally shifted. And I think it's the accessibility for artists to be able to make those prints now is just getting a little more economically easier to do. And so we're really proud of like giving that education to them. Like, we know people want to purchase. Let's give them different price points and different places where they can actually do that.
It's great to hear that there's actually like some innovative ways of working with the price point issue that I think a lot of artists and consumers, buyers struggle with to like to meet in a middle ground. I actually was going to ask like you if there are any kind of art forms that seem to be particularly popular and why do you think that is? So the prints, so that kind of makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, some of my own artwork that I've made in the past, I thought about selling, and part of the obstacle was like, well, I don't know how to make prints, or it's expensive to make prints. So yeah. I think, well, maybe that's encouraging to know. Looking at it now, maybe it's gotten a little bit easier than it was like seven, eight years ago.
Yeah, for sure. So I think that's the online digital, you know, or being able to go places in Spokane and scan your work and have that digital piece that then you can print wherever you want. Mm-hmm. I think has become easier and more accessible for people just to understand like how to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's good news. And it's also makes the art more accessible to buyers. Mm-hmm. So, but I'm curious, is there any other like type of medium or artwork that is most popular among, well, not only the consumers, but like artists? What kind of range of products? I don't know if I want to call them products, but like pieces, whatever you want to call them. What kind of range of stuff do you see? You've given me a little bit of an overview, but you know, what is there like a signature sort of product of Terrain, of Spokane in general?
Well, I'm curious always,
what each of our answers are.
Yeah, like you will always find something Spokane on things, which is great. I think that like
the garbage goat on anything.
Garbage goat on anything, put it on it. We're getting really into marmots right now. Yeah. So
like, I feel like,
let's bring the marmot up. It needs more play.
I feel like printmaking. Yeah, like, printmaking, like not just really making prints of art, but you know, wood cutting, lino cut, lithographs, things like that. There's a burgeoning community that's getting a lot more serious.
Yeah, I would definitely say that. I think ceramics as well, although I think there's a little bit more of a barrier there to get into ceramics.
But there's some great community studios.
Yeah, there's great community studios. And there's also, you know, Spokane Print and publishing. Like it's getting more accessible to like teach yourself how to do that stuff, or not teach yourself, but go in and learn from those folks how to do that. They're sharing those art forms. more readily that I think allows more people to take advantage of that.
I think that's one of the barriers too, especially when you're talking about how do I make prints? How do I even start that process? There can be such a barrier to entry with just knowledge, how-tos, the things that artists learn over a career. To be able to share that knowledge with other artists and not make them figure it out themselves is really generous. And it's something that Spokane artists are doing more and more of. And it's fantastic. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we're trying to do that. You know, our train talks that I was talking about, you know, it's bringing in other artists and other makers to talk and just share their experience, whether they're a photographer or they know about marketing, like they're that kind of like hive mind of that information is starting to be shared. I think you're right. Like we're all starting to realize like, oh, we'd be better off if we were just like all learning this together.
If we had community.
And had community. So that, you know, we obviously work really hard on that. And I think, you know, that you get that just from being in a market. If you're an artist and you've never been in a market and you get into a market and you're looking around and seeing other people's booth setups, you learn like, oh, that person seems to be doing really well. It isn't always just because of the product. It's sometimes because of the way they set their booth up.
Yeah.
And they've done it multiple times and they've learned over time that like, oh, if I sit in the back of my booth, no one's going to come in because they're too scared. But if I move things around, then people feel more comfortable walking into my booth and engaging with my product. So it's like this, you know, they get a chance to learn from each other, not just having to figure it out on their own.
That's funny you say that. Actually, my mom, she lives in Colorado, but she has her own small business doing woodworking.
Oh, nice.
She makes like table lamps, floor lamps, candle holders, mobiles, all different kinds of just accessories, a range of which they can kind of range from like smaller, cheaper accessories, like little coasters to her like lamps and bigger pieces of furniture that cost, you know, multiple hundreds of dollars and paintings and such. And I helped her this last summer. I helped her booth at an event for the first time. And it was kind of interesting seeing, like, how the way you're exactly right, like, the way you set up the booth and how you angle, even just angling your table so that it's an opening space, like, draws people in, and how the way that you engage with people versus, like, standing in the back and going out and talking to people. Like, I definitely noticed that.
It's so it was huge. It's huge. And I think anybody who's listening, if they go to any of the markets and they start thinking about that and seeing that. And it's also, you know, it seems so natural that, oh yeah, there's a market and then they have a booth. And I mean, all these people are business people, right? And you're like, no, these are artists and creatives who didn't necessarily want to go into business, but they know that this is a way that they can continue to do their artistic practice. And so they're not necessarily don't really think, sometimes they just don't know. They're like, I didn't even think about that. Like, what it meant if I was just sitting in the back or that I didn't talk to anybody. I just thought they would come to me. And you're like, you kind of have to be a salesperson.
Yeah, you got to market yourself.
Yeah, you got to market yourself. And that's the hardest part.
It's so awful.
Yeah. And so it's like them. And then I think you know, the more you do it, the more comfortable you get. And the more you understand that like people want to actually meet you as the maker or the artist, because that's why they're doing it. They want that, again, that attachment to another person and that attachment to community. And that's an opportunity for them to do that.
Especially if artists are able to do their craft at their booth site.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, the amount of people that will come and engage with you.
People will see you like doing, like working.
Actually making
carving a block or working on a watercolor or working on jewelry, whatever it is. That's the thing we do in the From Here store as well. The artists who sell in the From Here store will have a shift where they come and are there for people to ask questions of. They're working on their craft, and it's just another way for the public to engage with the artistic community.
And then I think lends back into understanding why something is priced the way that it is, because you're actually physically seeing that person make that thing, and now you're starting to understand that that's the value. You know, the value is that human being who's making that thing in our community, and now you're like, okay, that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, that totally does. I think it's fair to say that a lot of creatives are probably familiar with the struggle of having not only to be a creative, but having to learn business. Mm-hmm. And a lot of creatives probably like don't want to or don't care for it.
Yeah.
So it's like a familiar struggle for many, if you know, I'm curious, like, just do you have any other just kind of really quick one-on-one tips for say you're tabling an event or mm-hmm. You have a booth, you're trying to get better at in-person interactions or even online interactions, like if that kind of that self-marketing personability doesn't necessarily come naturally mm-hmm. to you, what are some tips folks can use?
Oh man. So one of the things in our creative enterprise program, we have subject matter experts come and help them to like learn these things. And I am certainly not like, I'm actually probably really bad at it. If I try to tell you what we do, I'm like, I don't know all of this stuff. It's just, you know, it's that repetitiveness and kind of learning your why, like what they learn in that class. Just learning their why is maybe the most important thing, because then you can explain to other people why it is that you do this. Like, why do you paint? Like, because you think it's pretty? No, it's usually a little deeper than that. 99.9% of the time, it's much deeper than that. And I think if you can, again, explain that why to people in a concise way, then they're kind of bought in on you and your product. They now understand, again, it's the same thing. It's just making that attachment to a human being and giving them a reason to support you. Mm-hmm. And we find that to be like a very revelatory process for a lot of folks, to be like, okay, you aren't actually selling anything. You're selling yourself. You're not selling your products. You're selling who you are. And mm-hmm. that's what you have to kind of figure out.
Yeah. And I think that the biggest advice I could give is to take yourself seriously. Mm-hmm. I think it's really easy for artists to undervalue themselves or to not consider themselves artists. They may consider themselves a maker or a crafter, but you're an artist and it's okay to say that you are. And taking yourself seriously might mean you have to be a little uncomfortable. It might mean that you're going to get a business license and you're going to file quarterly taxes. But it also may be just means that you have a website that you can send people to instead of sending them to your Instagram. Instagram is perfectly valid. But if you want to take that next step, you know, mm-hmm. making a website can be an easy foot forward.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've always wondered, like, why do you think it is that so many creatives kind of struggle with the idea of taking themselves seriously? And there's a lot of people like downplaying their skills, mm-hmm. downplaying their value. It's something I see a lot with creatives. Why?
I'm going to say I think that's a societal norm. It's I think something that's been fed to us that being an artist isn't a real job.
It's undervalued.
Yeah, it's undervalued. It's not seen as something that you could pursue. And I think that I hope that's kind of what we're trying to change that narrative around of like, no, you can be an artist and you can be a thriving artist and you can continue to do your work. It may sometimes always be your side project, but if you really, again, like dedicate yourself to it, it can become your main thing that you do. I really think that's just, and imposter syndrome is a real thing.
Huge. Mm-hmm. And I would say that you're an artist even if you have a day job, even if mm-hmm. art is something you do for 4 hours on the weekend, you're an artist. And if someone asks what you do, you can say, I'm an artist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that's so important to say. Like, I think there's a lot of truth to what you said about just the social conditioning and mm-hmm. capitalist mm-hmm. America.
And that can be really hard, again, for artists to...
I think there's a lot of intimidation. Yeah. I'm going to cut you off. No. I think there's a lot of, like, intimidation and pressure about, like, how we perceive and how I think maybe more creative types perceive business in the mm-hmm. world of business.
Exactly.
As this really kind of harsh, confusing, overwhelming
sellout. And then it's only about selling money, you know, and I think that, yeah,
there's a lot of negative, also there's a lot of, I think, negative association.
And we do a lot of learning around that, again, in that creative enterprise program, where we really talk a lot about that. And that is a struggle that I think, you know, as you, if you're taking, especially something that's your passion, and turning that into a business, that can be really, really hard. And also, again, it's kind of like, oh, do I feel good about selling this stuff for money? Or is it worth somebody even buying? Or, you know, should I be making money off of this? You know, it is that like a hard struggle to be like, am I going to enter into this capitalistic side of this and, mm-hmm. you know, grapple with that? And you know, there's worse ways to make money. You know, it's like you could do something that you're passionate about and turn that into a business, and you can choose what that looks like. You can do a B Corp. You don't have to be an LLC, only selling widgets and all of that. You can donate back portions of your sales to an organization you believe in. There's lots of ways to do it that don't feel as icky. Capitalistic and icky.
Yeah. I think it's hard for artists to view themselves in a monetary way. Mm-hmm. It can be difficult to learn how to price your art. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really difficult learning how to price your art when most people, and they mean so well, will offer you $50 for anything. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter what it is. They're like, can you draw a portrait of me? I'll give you $50. And getting out of that mindset of accepting money for anything because you're so grateful for the opportunity, mm-hmm. to being like, no, I know my worth. I know that my work is unique. I know that it's valuable, and I'm going to find a way to, receive that value.
Yeah. And that can be, if you're not getting direct education around that, it again can go back to looking what other artists are doing, mm-hmm. Look at what they're pricing their work at, kind of see, again, like every market is different, not market as in like each art market, which those are different as well, but mm-hmm. Each different market you sell in, mm-hmm. or if you're selling online in a different city, it can be a different price than what it is here versus other places. So like if you're doing markets all over the country, let's say you're going to California or Oregon or whatever, their market could be a lot different than ours, and looking at like, okay, what's the range of prices there versus what it is here? People might be willing to spend more in those places than they are here. Mm-hmm. Or vice versa. Maybe we're willing to spend more.
Spokane cares about the arts.
Exactly.
That's a really good point. Because that is something that I've also felt really confused about. If I were just even thinking about selling my artwork, is that, well, I don't even know how to start pricing it. What do I focus on? The amount of time it took, the meaning, mm-hmm. the is it based on the significance of the piece to me, mm-hmm. How easily replicable it is, mm-hmm. the materials involved, yeah. labor, like there's a lot of pieces.
We do definitely we never say like, oh, you should absolutely price it at this point. This is how much it should be. Cause that, again, it is very subjective. And like you're saying, there's so many factors that go into it. But like Rachel said, it's like what we know for sure is you shouldn't undervalue what you're doing. So think about, if you had a different job and it was this many dollars per hour and it took you this long, you would get paid X amount of dollars. Then look at how much material, what you paid for the material, and start to break that down and say, okay, I used half a tube of $8 paint and I used up all these brushes and I did all this, and like start to think about like, and the canvas cost this much and I want to put it in a nice frame and
and then charge more
and it's okay to do that. And I think it's also fine to just try and see, and mm-hmm. if it doesn't, we had a lot of people in Terrain who are like, oh, it's just not for sale. We're like, why not? Mm-hmm. And again, it's because they're scared to they don't know what to price it at. They don't think it's good enough that anybody's going to buy it. And I think you'd be surprised at like the amount of work that sells. And you're like, if you just put a price on it and find out. And then that can be a starting point for you to kind of understand like, okay, next time I'm going to take more into consideration my cost of goods and be sure that I'm pricing this at the point that makes sense for me to keep doing this, mm-hmm. and what your outcome is,
Absolutely. I think I like the idea of also selling the story, because that's the thing about art. It's whatever it is you're making, whatever your medium, there's a story behind there was some kind of inspiration that led to you making wanting to make this piece, whatever it is. So that piece is what people can connect to, that the story.
Mm-hmm. And it's so important.
It sells really well. Stories sell really well.
So well. It is crazy, like the change of how people understand the work that you do when you're able to articulate that. And it does change their mindset around you. And I we see that in our creative enterprise program. They come in at the beginning and they're like, I don't have a why. I don't know. And then you're like, literally the next class, everybody's like, oh, it's because when I was little and then I did this. And then, and they have a why. They have a massive story behind what they're doing and why they do it. And that's, again, that's what you're selling. You're selling the why, not mm-hmm. the product. and then the product was sold. Usually.
Usually, yeah.
It's always.
And that happens too, and I think maybe there's a sense of, okayness with when things don't go according to plan, that it's just not taking it personally, I think, because it is so personal, selling your art. So, absolutely. You know, how do you kind of deal with when you have a bust day or something is without it being like, oh, it's because my work is bad and people don't care about my work. And like, you know, how do you,
it could be so many things. That? It could be the weather. It could be like, you know, it's like, it's just some days are just not there, you know, different market days. I think what we encourage people and like a no is not for forever and don't think that if you didn't get into something that means you should never, you'll never get into anything. It's like, you're going to get more no's than yeses. And if you talk to really established artists, the amount of things that they apply for and don't get into is higher than the amount that they do. And it's not a reflection of your creativity or how good you are. It's just the way that it operates. Or like for our markets, you know, we have a limited number of booths. There's so many good people that don't get into our events
just because of the logistics, because
of space. We just can't hold anymore. And it's terrible. We feel terrible. And we have an external jury, luckily. So we're not, so we kind of, again, take ourselves out of it. And then it's, you know, based on what the person has applied with, but you know, we look at that list and we're like, gosh, there's so many good people. Yeah. Like Burzar is one that is just a killer for us because we get, I think we had over 2 times the amount that we can fit into the mall for the event. And
In applicants.
And so half of those people are getting a no when really they're great makers. They make great work, great artists. We just don't have the space for all of it. So
a bigger space.
Yes, you need a bigger space. Absolutely. Absolutely. Someday.
So then tell us more about what we can expect to see, what people can expect to see at Bazaar this weekend, this coming weekend.
Next weekend.
This, not, yes. Okay, so, that's confusing for, especially like people listening to this like on replay or through the archives. We're talking about the 20th. Is that right? June 20th, 2026.
There's, I mean, Jackie already talked about the amazing vendors that we have, over 130 vendors, crossing everything from visual art to ceramics and jewelry and all of that. But all that fun stuff. We also have live music all day. And we have a run of, gosh, 8 or so different bands that are going to be playing throughout the day. We have some really great local partners that will be on site with us, including KYRS and yourself. And it's just going to be a great sense of community.
Yeah, it's just fun to bring people downtown. We do have some partners that we always, because this is downtown, we've always said like, we want people to come downtown and like do other things. Come down, shop the event, go have lunch, maybe come back to the event, go have dinner and then maybe come back to the event. You know, like getting them downtown and visiting, not just our event, but to support other small local businesses in downtown, other restaurants. That's super important for these events to have that ripple effect. We have some great partners. We have like a what we're calling like an unofficial beer garden at Flatstick. They'll have $1 of a particular beer that will go back to Terrain. And then Bustango will have a Huckleberry martini. That $1 of that, those sales of each martini will go back to Terrain. And then Indaba as well throughout this week, I believe.
Yes, I believe so.
They have a special Bazaar delicious matcha drink, right?
Is it the kiwi?
Yeah, with the kiwi on top.
It's a bizarre drink.
It's very bizarre. and then what else do we have? There's one other that I'm... Oh,
Scoop?
Yeah, the Scoop will be there with their Scoop truck.
That's the ice cream.
Ice cream, and 10% of their ice cream sales on that day will go back to Terrain as well. So,
love to see all the local businesses getting involved.
Yeah, we really are, you know, like that's what's fun. We'll have a fun vintage photo booth. We'll have kids activities. Rachel's doing a fun little community art type of project that people can take part in. So it'll be a ton of fun activities to do all throughout the day.
We're going to have some live puppeteering as well.
Yes.
Around the noon hour.
Yeah.
Which is going to be absolutely fun. Yeah, it's just going
to
be really
fun. We're trying
fun.
To get more weird. We need to get more weird.
Yeah, if you next year have ideas for some weird stuff, let us know.
More bizarre.
More weird, like weird artwork or yeah. just weird?
Weird things going on. We used to have like stilt walkers and things like that.
Carnival-esque
yes,
kind carnival-esque of vibes.
Bizarre, kind of bizarre, bizarre.
Man,
vibes.
Yeah, I mean, oh, so what's it place called? Oh, geez. There's a venue here in Spokane. They do, it used to be a church. The Guardian?
Oh, yes.
You guys
yeah.
know The Guardian? Mm-hmm. Do you guys have events Very there?
Cool. We've never done events there.
Oh,
I haven't
you should
been
party.
There,
you want to do something carnival-esque.
Awesome.
That
yes.
is a perfect opportunity because they do a lot of like kind of alternative art mm-hmm. and events, artistic events
yeah.
there. They did like a vampire burlesque
mm-hmm. Incredible.
Show there
yeah.
for Halloween. Yeah. They have Shibari events.
Yeah.
I could foresee an event where you guys would partner with them and kind of tap into the more, like maybe the more performative arts.
So we have that more in Terrain, because Terrain is it's everything. It's performance art, literary art, music,
film.
Visual art. What was that?
Film.
It's the whole gamut. And we've had them come and do like the aerial.
Fun.
Aerial stuff by our stage and all of that. So yeah, great. Super fun. That's an amazing venue.
I'm trying to yeah. think what counts as weird art, too. Do you guys have flow artists?
Florists?
Flow artists, like yeah. fire spinners?
Oh
or
my God.
No.
LEDs? I don't think the fire department would love
yeah.
it.
Yeah, I was like, we've gone down that road, and it ends up being, I think it's more, it's expensive for the person who also wants to do it. They have to, like, get a special permit to do it.
So you could do...
just, like, a big hula hoop.
Fun. Yeah, a big giant hula hoop.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say. So, like, because this is a big thing in the music festival and the rave community.
Mm-hmm.
But not just fire, but LED. Whatever you can do,
oh, yeah.
whatever kind of flow art you can do with a fire toy, you can do with an LED toy. Mm-hmm. So poi,
yeah.
What are the dragon staff, the big set. You could, can work
fun.
Around the,
yeah,
fire
yeah, the fire
problem.
Issue. We're always working around the fire problem.
Yeah, that's
like our life.
That's an energy that we could bring into the
yeah.
next one for sure.
Bring in the yeah. festival people.
Bring in the
yes.
festival people. We
yes.
know we know they're here.
Oh, yes.
Oh, we are. There's a lot of us out here. And I think other creatives from other subcultures
mm-hmm.
That are like just kind of tied into their subcultures that would love a platform.
Yeah. And that's why they should apply for Terrain.
There
apply
you go.
Terrain,
that is a
June 22nd
perfect
cut off.
Place to showcase that kind of stuff. Because we have a stage, we have, you know, like it's set up for that kind of stuff versus where Bazaar, we do have a stage at Bazaar, but it's not appropriate for, it would be hard to dance on. It's quite small. yeah, it's like itty bitty. But like Terrain is where we want people to bring all of that, like all their weird ideas and the performances they've been wanting to do, especially in the performing arts. We're always encouraging more of that. So if
yeah.
anybody's listening is interested, June 22nd.
You heard it, folks.
The deadline.
Yeah, and especially I think one of our biggest creative subcultures here in Spokane is our music subcultures and mm-hmm. Music fandoms. And I know like a lot of folks who do artwork, who sell their art who within like venues
mm-hmm.
in the music space. I know Red Room, for example, mm-hmm. they have been doing an artist spotlight like once every Thursday or
cool.
once a month or
uh-huh.
every 2 weeks. I think it's once a month.
Yeah.
They bring a different artist to spotlight their artwork, and it's marketed mostly to like ravers
mm-hmm.
and people who belong to that music subculture. But I mean, that's, I'm thinking there's like so much opportunity there for crossover
for sure
for those artists to reach a bigger platform
mm-hmm.
and to kind of get more visibility for that community as well.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of possibilities there.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you for sharing that. And where can people find?
I was just gonna. I was thinking that,
like,
I was like, they're not gonna know where to apply.
Off. Yes. Where can people apply? Where can people find out more information about Terrain in general and
yeah.
Bazaar?
So our website's terrainspokane.com. You can always look up at the top. It says open artist call, or it says like happening now and then open artist calls. So you can always see the calls that are open currently. That's our only call right now that's open is for Terrain. We've kind of pushed everything really, really early so that we can be prepared and give people enough time, especially for our markets, to give them time to prepare. We used to be like really, really late. They'd be like, and then same with Terrain. We've kind of shifted that forward a little bit so people are still getting used to that timeline. But yeah, they can go on there and find the application, and there's more information about that. You can also just go through our website and you can learn about each one of the different events and programs that we do, and just kind of look there. And then, I mean, always reach out. Our email address is team@terrainspokane.com. If you have a question, or if you're looking at the application, you don't understand something, or you're not sure how your art form might fit in or what category it is, reach out before the 22nd and we can help you.
And if you're not an artist but you want to be involved in Terrain, volunteers are our lifeblood. Mm-hmm. We'll be doing a call for volunteers for our flagship event soon.
And the best part about being a volunteer for the flagship event is you get to see all the art before anybody else.
Nice.
It's a little tip. Mm-hmm. You get in the door first. You're hot there. Tip. Hot tip.
You get to see it all before the chaos erupts.
Yes, exactly.
It's always a nice perk. Mm-hmm. All right, well, that concludes our time for today. I think that was a perfect amount of time to cover everything, even though we lost a little bit of time at the top of the hour thanks to the traffic. But that was really informative for me personally. Like, I actually feel like I'm learning some insights and tips for my own creative journey. And
good.
I hope maybe it was the same for anybody who's listening today. And thank you for sharing the information about Bazaar as well and all your upcoming events. I'd love to see you guys there at one of the few. Maybe I might be able to make next weekend. We'll see.
Hopefully. I should say we also have a newsletter, just an email newsletter that we've found, with the days of the algorithm, people aren't seeing the things that they need to see in the timely manner. And so if you're on our website, a little pop-up will come up and say sign up for a newsletter, and I would highly suggest that. That's how you find out about things that are happening. Yeah, keep track of the deadlines that are coming up. We remind people like too many times, but there's never enough times to remind them. Like, deadline is whatever date it is. So be sure to sign up for that as well.
Perfect. All right. Thank you guys for joining us today, Jackie and Rachel. It's been a delight being in your company. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. And you heard us. If you're interested in learning more information, you've got the website, you've got Terrain socials, you've got the newsletter, you got a lot of different options. Well, hopefully I might get a chance to catch you guys in the wild at the event next weekend. But in the meantime, thank you all for being here. And thank you, folks, for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed today's show, and we're going to catch you next time. Bye-bye.